are the Mythbusters.
Mike Bask.
What do you mean, providing you don't move, it's good?
And Emma Bask.
Well, I can't see anything, but my head's roughly... I'll just move the things up here so I can read them.
Between them, more than 20 years of tournament experience.
They don't just tell the myths, they put them to the test.
Objective Secured podcast. My name's Mike.
Hi, I'm Emma.
And this is episode 29, Mythbusters.
29, I'm feeling fine.
We're in holiday mode while we're recording this, and by the time you hear it, we will be away on holidays, and Emma's in a bit of a strange mood as a result. So
that's because after 7 weeks of being sick, I'm finally starting to feel better. So this isn't a strange mood. This is my normal mood. You just haven't seen it for a long time.
Well, hopefully it'll make the editing easier if you're not coughing and spluttering every 10 minutes.
I can't guarantee anything, but I'll give it a go.
So we're going to be talking tournament myths today. Some of the myths that are perpetuated and grown from third-hand stories all across the internet about how tournament players behave, what you can expect at tournaments, and generally all the stuff that you see on the internet these days that talk about, you know, how bad tournaments can be for some players.
Yeah, I think that we, as you say, we see things on the internet and people believe it. If you read it often enough, then you believe it to be true. And we were recording this pre-Masters, but we're putting it out post-Masters. And so we finished all of our events for the year. But I guess we just wanted to kind of think about the myths that are out there that might be putting people off attending events either in WA or across Australia or anywhere outside of Australia. And just try and address some of those and share what our experiences have been like and hopefully shatter some of those myths.
Or at least provide an alternate point of view at the very least, because some of them will be personal preference and some of them will be personal opinion.
Of course.
And we'll provide some, I suppose, counterpoints to some of those opinions and things, I suppose.
Mm. As always, we'll debate and argue and agree to disagree and move on.
And have no answer by the end of the hour.
Perfect.
As Emma mentioned, this is being recorded before our final event for the year, for Masters 2018. We've got 56 players registered for it. At the time of recording, there's still about 20 players who haven't submitted their lists, and they've got about 12 hours to do it. So get amongst it, please. Hopefully you did. Hopefully no one got penalty points applied.
Mm-hmm.
At the time of recording, we have no Orcs, despite the Codex being brand new, and at least three players that I'm aware of having them. So I'm very disappointed at this moment in time.
Ah, well, people leave things to the last minute. It's fine.
That's true.
I've still got 12 whole hours.
12 hours.
12 whole hours.
So congratulations to whoever that winner happens to be.
Mm-hmm.
We'll probably not be able to announce that on a podcast until, the second or third week in December, just before Christmas, because we have two episodes while we're away in the UK.
It will be at least the third week in December.
Yeah, so we'll probably say congratulations.
Should we go through and go congratulations too?
Well, I can't edit it while we're away.
That's true. So. But if we just say congratulations to everyone's name, then they should be in there, unless the person who...
is a late submission, yeah, after the recording.
Exactly. Okay, let's not do that.
No. Yeah, so we hope that everyone enjoyed Masters.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you to our sponsors for the event. OTP Terrain have given us a whole bunch of stuff to give away. We've got some cool purity seals that were donated to us by Troy at Sardawin's Foundry. If you came to show, you would have seen him as our hulking ultramarine cosplayer.
Mm-hmm.
He was also at the birthday for the Perth Games Workshop store.
He was at Morley as well, wasn't he?
He was at Morley one as well. He was behind the counter and featured on the Warhammer community site, though, as part of their 500 things.
It's exciting.
So thank you to him for providing those. thank you to all the players for turning up and playing and hopefully having a good time.
And I'm sure that we get to say thank you to the people who helped set up and pack up, because they're always there and always helping
out. Yes.
Which is fantastic.
At the time of recording, we've also seen some of the sneak peek jerseys that a couple of the guys are coming
in. Yeah, it's really cool. It's actually really cool seeing the creation of these gaming groups and how this is actually building those smaller groups as well and encouraging people to play together and get together. So I'm really loving that.
Yeah, so we've got, I think, two...
some friendly banter and sort of rivalry.
Mm. We've got two that have been... one that sort of kick-started it all in the form of the Toy Soldier Cartel.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Tabletop Mafia showed up more recently, and there's a couple more groups that are slowly getting together and forming their own better word. So
yeah,
it's kind of cool to see now.
And it is really cool.
The 2019 season will no doubt see more of that rivalry, because we've got obviously got the schedule to come out once we get back from holiday. Which will,
once we write it. We'll release it once we write
which
it.
Which will include the WATC.
Yeah.
Which will be another April event. And we've already got talk from the East Coast of coming over for it. Mm-hmm. So that'll be interesting as well. What else has been happening for us? We've been getting ready to go over and do our family holiday / working trip.
Mm-hmm.
We've got our appointments all booked with Warhammer World. And then Emma's making the mistake of leaving me there for half a day by myself.
It's okay, I'm taking the credit card.
I've got a travel card and I've got a backup.
Taking that too. I'm going to leave you there with a sandwich and a bottle of water, and you can look with your eyes and not with a wallet. How's that?
Yeah, that's not happening. you will catch us that week. So the week of, normally we do a live stream on Facebook on the 28th of November, mm-hmm. the Wednesday. Mm-hmm. We'll be moving it one day to the 29th of November, which is my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be at Warhammer World on that day. Mm-hmm. So if I've worked it all correctly, which I think I have, we'll be doing it for West Australian viewers somewhere around sort of 8:30 at night, which means...
I really don't think you
we'll
have
be in the bar that. Between 12:30 or around 12:30 in the UK. They're 8 hours behind us.
Yeah, and if you take 8 hours off 12:30, I get that to be 4:30.
At 8:30 at night, take 8 hours off that, and we're at lunch.
Okay, yeah, no, you're right. I'm wrong. I've gone the other way. I've taken 8 hours off where we are.
Yeah.
Okay, I apologize. I know that's twice I've been wrong now. Oh my goodness.
It's all recorded.
Oh, far out.
Yeah, so we're going to be doing it live from Bugman's Bar. It won't be as long as our usual live streams, because we've only got limited bandwidth, and it'll be from a mobile phone, not from our usual recording gear.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll hope for their lunch and say hi.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, we have a little bit of family time while we're away, and then one more podcast after that.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be interesting to see what we actually get out of that. So
you're going to give it a go.
One other thing we do have to do is say thank you to our patrons who joined us on Patreon through the month of November.
Mm-hmm.
By the time you are listening to... No, that won't happen. You're not getting your December podcast until...
Yeah.
No, this is happening...
God, I'm so lost.
This is what happens when we try and record too far into the future.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, we've just been doing it the 29th of November, so of course they're going to be getting...
No.
No.
But yeah. They'll hear this and they'll still have to wait another...
However long.
It'll literally be 2 days after we're live at Wine World. They'll get their next podcast through the Patreon page. Yes, I think that's right.
No idea.
So thank you to our patrons for supporting us, and we hope you're enjoying the content that's going through the Patreon page there. We have a few interesting things that are going to come through once we get back from our break, including some exclusive video content and some more audio that you guys will get access to early. So yeah.
And a Patreon... Patreon members. I'm just going to go with members. Members only event that we're planning.
Yes.
Fingers crossed for early January.
Yeah. So a few things for those people who are supporting us in that way. For those of you who can't or feel or choose not to, that's completely fine as well.
Nothing will change in what we're providing. So.
But thank you to those people who've chosen to support us.
Hmm.
Anyway, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back to talk about all the myths and legends that are tournaments.
Hmm.
So, we haven't decided whether this is going to be part one or part two.
Well, no, we haven't decided if this is going to be a two-part or two parts. And
so we'll preface this with this might be part one.
Yep.
And you'll have to listen to part two for the second half of the topic in the next episode. Mm-hmm. Or maybe we'll wrap it up now and we'll let you know at the end of this segment whether it's going to be one or two.
Depends.
We'll figure that out. Yeah. We're going to be talking tournament myths. And we started a bit of a conversation with it on our Facebook page.
Did we?
Well, you did.
Yeah.
It's colloquial we.
Yeah, that's
it's objective what I thought.
Secured
we. Mm-hmm. Asking you guys and gals for your thoughts on some myths that we could talk about that we might be able to prove wrong or bust or debunk.
So we've got a couple that we'll just get straight off the bat. So one is that if you put more effort into painting your army, the more effort you put into painting your army, the better the dice rolls you'll get while playing in a tournament.
That's not a myth. That's true.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. 100%. Yeah. I do like this one as well.
Although I should point out, there is a myth that says a newly painted model is always the first, like it'll die to the most random thing instantly as soon as you put it on the table. That is also true. Because I painted my monolith for 7th edition, had never seen the table, took it to ATC, put it on the table, the very first LAS cannon, the first shot of the first game that it had ever been on the table. Hit, penetrate 6, explode, dead.
Well, so, based on that expert research of one instance.
Anecdotal evidence, yep.
Yeah, that's it. Anecdotal, not even scientific evidence for one instance. I think we can 100% say
it's true.
That
it happens.
Is true. Yep, definitely. So that was Hugh's suggestion. I absolutely love this next one from Aaron, who says the rules are on the underside of the table, and to see them, you have to flip the table.
He can do it in his own time, not without terrain.
Look, Mike.
To be fair, we don't know if that's a myth because no one's ever gone looking.
I do know that it's a myth because
you've helped me lug the tables.
I'm the one that stickered the tables, and there's what's on the underside of our table is a sticker that says objective secured.
That's true.
There are no rules. Mike says that he will totally win.
This is not me, by the way. This is another Mike, one of our listeners.
Yeah.
To quote Mike specifically, it says, "I will totally win" is a myth. No, that's confirmed as true because Mike has some terrible luck when it comes to dice. So it's a myth that he will totally win.
Okay.
I think that makes sense.
No, it doesn't. You've got that wrong. But anyway.
I think I have.
It's not true.
Yeah, it's not true.
So we've busted that myth.
Okay. This is going to be one of those episodes.
I don't think it is. Just focus. Daniel says, fluffy lists. Oh, no, that's actually a decent point.
That's a decent one, yeah.
Yep, that's a decent point too. And there was another one that I like this one as well. Brendan says that he heard that when you kill your opponent's little men, you get to keep them. I think that should be true.
I think there's probably games that have happened under the influence of alcohol where that might have been true for certain players.
Hmm.
I could see that being a game of some kind. Maybe not on a 40K scale and certainly not with Apocalypse involved because there's no way you're blowing up a Titan and taking it home with you.
Yeah.
I
was joking. I don't actually think it's true, nor do I actually think it's true that if you paint your models well, you'll roll better dice.
Look, Justin's also got a complete fabricated myth. Like, it's completely not true.
No, that one is true.
No, it's not. That Emma is the brain and I'm just the table moving muscle.
Oh, no, you're right. It is false. I shift the tables while you chat.
Bugger off.
I don't do it alone. There's a whole heap of
generally. I'm the one who loads the damn trailer.
Okay, we are not arguing about this.
Yeah.
But I think that Emma is the tawny brain and often the muscle moving the tables as well. But I'm quite weak. So I move one table at a time.
You're
slowly.
Moving one 2x4 panel.
No, I can do 2x4s, I can do 3 of.
I'm carrying 9.
It's the 3x4s that I struggle with.
Yeah.
Hammerhead Games that.
Shout out to Tony and Hammerhead.
Actually, no, that's a proper one as well.
Yeah, it is a proper one. So you want to start? We'll start with the proper one then.
I think I've covered all of the less proper ones. This one is a joke as well. But I think that it does actually cover a couple of things.
We're not doing Hammerhead, we're going to do someone else?
Oh yeah, I'm going somewhere else.
Okay.
We'll come back to Hammerhead. This one's by Aaron. And he said that nerds naturally smell like beautiful butterflies and don't need deodorant or showers. So, there's two parts of that. The first part that is something that I think that we should probably address is that tabletop games is played by nerds. And the second part...
Well, that's generally true.
Well, we're going to come back to that in a minute. Let's come back to that in a minute.
Okay.
Let's look at the smell like beautiful butterflies and don't need deodorant or showers. In probably the 90s, maybe 2000s, there was a TV ad about sun cream. Here in Australia, yes. And that TV ad said, apply yourself to reapply. Now, I believe that rule should be applied to deodorant.
Yeah, at the very least. And ideally daily with a shower.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely daily with a shower. But during a tournament, I think it should be at the end
mandatory.
Of every round.
Like, at least at lunchtime.
Not just once a day, regularly.
At lunchtime and before the awards.
And I'm not suggesting that our players are smelly. What I'm suggesting is that when you have 60 to 100 adults in one room, things can get really funky.
Even 20 in a small enough room is a problem.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've joked in the past about when we used to go to the old Perth Games Workshop store. And I reckon when Games Workshop moved out of that Rain Square store, they would have had to change the carpet.
Well, they demolished the building.
Yeah, well, I think that was probably a little drastic. But I could have totally understood painting it and getting rid of the carpet. Like, I think that smell was grounding.
Mm-hmm. Well, the certainly part of the tournament kit that we've suggested in the past and I continue to take to tournaments is a can of deodorant in the backpack.
Mm-hmm.
If you're traveling via plane, you might have to take a roll-on instead.
Mm-hmm.
And just chuck it in your carry-on or your suitcase. Probably your suitcase is the safest place.
You can have spray cans.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah.
And it's quite common for events when you see someone, like I've seen groups, I've had it happen to me where I pulled out a can and spray myself, someone comes up and says, can I borrow that?
Yeah.
And it goes around half a dozen people before you see the can again.
Yes.
So I think that's a perfectly valid...
Be generous with sharing with that.
what about the nerds?
Yeah, so I do want to just touch on that. I think that that is one of the myths and stereotypes about gaming is people have an idea about what a stereotypical gamer looks like and
It's still the 80s basement dwelling persona, and that's certainly not what we see at our events as the majority.
No, and I think that...
It might not even be a minority. It might just be like a fluke.
Yeah, I think that the idea around what they look like, how they behave, lack of social skills, that kind of thing has really been ingrained into what people think about when they think about gamers. And I suppose that's probably the first myth that I would really like to discuss is around, like, and we joke about it, but you cannot, if you're walking down the street, you cannot pick someone who is a gamer or who isn't a gamer based on what they look like.
Occasionally you'll be able to because they'll be carrying a carry case and...
They're carrying a carry case and they've got a slogan on their T-shirt about orcs or, you know, something like that. Then, sure, it's a bit of a giveaway or, you know, they've got the Imperial Eagle on their rucksack. Then, obviously, you've got a few clues to go with. But based on physical appearance, based on their ability to have a, you know, conversation with you and make eye contact... Or whether or not they've got a beard, I don't think you can make a judgment over, you know, that somebody is a gamer.
No, I mean we've got doctors, we've got multiple police officers who turn up to events, which I discovered at one of our events when it was like 10 of them in the room out of 60.
Mm-hmm.
We've got all sorts of professionals. We've got nurses and lawyers and
bus drivers. We've got all walks of life. Workers and fly in, fly out.
Yep, oil and gas
and younger players and people who are fit and spend half their life in the gym and the other half playing tabletop games.
And one of the guys,
other people like us who think, ooh, unless I'm naming my bed gym, I'm not going. So
well, there's one of the guys who comes regularly to tournaments who I didn't realize it is like a club DJ.
Hmm.
And he and I are friends on Facebook and I see him going out and doing all these events and DJ sessions and then he comes and plays Toy Soldiers.
And, you know... So we were talking about changing the date for show next year. So we've got that booked in for 1, 2, 3 of June next year. And, because the reason that we're doing that is because the AFL, so the Australian Football League Grand Final, is happening on the long weekend that we were, so it's happening on the long weekend that show normally happens, normally the last two years anyway. And we don't want to clash with the AFL Grand Final. And people are like, yeah, well, it's hardly like gamers are into football. So they're not your people. It's not an issue. Well, you can't say that.
No, there's plenty of them who it was only a semi-final over the weekend of show this year.
Yeah.
And we had plenty of them following the results all day. And then obviously
or who couldn't come because they were going to the game. Because
yeah, we had a couple of players pull out at the last minute because they got invited to family events with the football. So I definitely think the crossover into popular culture for gaming is on the cusp of being mainstream. Ooh. I don't think it's quite there yet.
I think it's getting there, and it's certainly becoming a lot more socially acceptable, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we've seen video games become more socially mainstream. We've seen like popular culture invaded by comic book movies.
And I think we're probably, so when I started this, you said that you think that it's true that most people who play are nerds. Is that definition of what a nerd is? And I think that being a nerd is becoming much more socially acceptable as well, and people are reclaiming that term of being a nerd.
Well, I remember seeing a descriptor of a nerd and a geek specifically because they are two different things. According to popular geekdom or nerddom, depending on which.
So I had a definition of the difference between nerds and geeks as well, but it's actually not acceptable for me to share on this podcast.
So the difference between nerd, geek and dork, the common thought is that nerds, geeks and dorks are one and the same. Looking at them online does prove... looking them up... online does prove amusing because apparently the first definition of nerd is a stupid, irritating, ineffectual, or unattractive person. You start looking at what popular culture, that's like the first response on Google.
Yeah.
And that probably doesn't help the stereotype if you put that in.
I suppose when I think about a nerd, geek, or dork, I think about Urkel.
Yeah. So...
for people who are old like me.
One of the definitions is a nerd is intelligent, industrious, and understands things. A geek is interested in things that only that others are not interested in, know a lot about their interests, and usually do not understand underlying principles. A dork is foolish, stupid, or clumsy. So, in terms of nerd, I don't think nerd's as negative as it could have been in the past, where it's intelligent, industrious, and understands things. So things like computer programmers, professionals, all that sort of stuff would technically be under that sort of...
I don't know, you can technically call them anything.
Yeah.
My point is that I don't think that we can... I don't think that we can stereotype gamers as any kind of personality type or physical appearance or social interactions. So I suppose I just wanted to kind of knock that one out of the water because I think that... It can actually be quite... When people are... So the reason that this podcast... Sorry, I know I'm talking in circles here. I'll try and get to the point. The reason this podcast actually happened is when we were thinking about what to cover, I wanted to cover, when people are either new to gaming or they're thinking about joining the tournament scene, what could we do to actually talk to them? What advice could we offer for getting into that? And so I thought the first thing to look at is possibly dispelling some of the myths. Well, and I think that myth around what kind of people play the games and not wanting to be associated with what that stereotype is...
Yeah, that's a fair call.
...potentially would stop people from walking through that door.
Well, I've just found another one on Urban Dictionary, the difference between nerds and geeks. And I actually think that the average gamer would be a geek, not a nerd, according to this.
Mm-hmm.
Nerds are smart people who lack much of a social life. They often have few friends. They don't talk much and don't expect others to talk much to them. They are usually nice people but don't have social skills to go out and meet new friends. Geeks are different in that they have social lives. However, these social lives are often pursuing some sort of passion that the geek is obsessed with. They spend all their time thinking about their one obsession and play at it all in their free time. Geeks are usually only friends with other geeks, and attempt to converse with geeks is futile unless, of course, you want to talk about Star Trek or whatever the certain geek is obsessed with. Nerds are often shy, where geeks are more outgoing. Nerds spend most of their free time studying, while geeks make free time so they can go and play Dungeons and Dragons. Nerds care about what others think of them, but geeks are almost universally oblivious to the existence of those outside of their geek clan. Based on all of this, this is the commenter, I would have to conclude that it is easy to be a friend to a nerd than a geek, but a geek would probably be a more interesting person.
I think that I don't think you can say more gamers would be geeks. I would say that you fit more in the definition
true.
Of a geek because
by
you
this
are
it
much
would, yeah.
by that definition because you're outgoing and will talk to anybody who will listen about tabletop gaming. Actually, you'll talk to anybody who will listen. Actually, you'll talk to anybody. They don't need to listen. So
well, we do a podcast, so
I know that's true. We're just talking into thin air, and hopefully, somebody will listen. So. Have we really? I think we've covered that.
Yeah, I don't know.
That I don't think when I, certainly when I now look at the people who come to events, I don't think that anybody fits in any particular category. And I think that based on that definition, we do have nerds who come and we have geeks who come and we have people who, well, I would probably count as a dork given I can fall over thin air. But, you know.
Yeah.
We just have people come. Let's just focus on that.
And look, again, we're dealing with what is, in theory, the most isolated capital city in the Western world. So our demographic base is uniquely separated from the rest of society. So your results may vary in your given area, wherever you might be listening to us.
Yeah, most definitely.
But our experience is...
So it might not actually even be geographic. So I think that for us, what we try and do is bring as many people... We try and be as open and inclusive as physically possible. Often when you have clubs or when you play with certain friends... It's like attracts like often. So you may find that in your particular gaming group, it is one particular stereotype of person.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, when you're looking at it across a state or a country, it doesn't necessarily hold true.
Well, those bigger events as well around the world will also attract people outside of the standard sphere of influence, which will in turn muddy the waters in terms of the type of people you get. And I'm sure that you will get some of those traditional stereotype style players when you start having 500, 600, 700, 800 people in a room. But it's certainly not the norm as far as we can see.
Yep. Okay. Myth number one, busted.
I'll see if I can find the right sound effect for that. I can't promise anything, people. You might be listening to this going, what sound effect? You didn't play it. Yeah, it's probably because
I couldn't
find it.
I'm sure everybody knows which sound effect you're talking about.
The stamp noise.
Yeah.
I'll see what I can do.
Ava's got some stamps. We can just borrow one.
That's hard to record on a microphone. Okay. So, should we start with start at the top and just work
start
our way down?
Start at the top. And then I've got my own list as well that I'd managed to compile before we asked people.
Given we're 15 minutes in, this might be a two-parter.
Do you reckon?
Maybe. Go on then.
Okay, so Bodhi says, no one ever has fun, it's all about smashing face. So before we start, because we are from Western Australia, that smashing face term, I'm not sure whether or not that's universal.
Whether that translates.
Yeah. So would you like to define what smashing face is?
Most of the people I see who try and claim the same, or what I would normally see it as the same terminology, is win at all costs. Hmm. But of course, we've defined in past episodes and online that win at all costs to us doesn't mean going along and just trying to roll your opponents.
Yeah.
There's a distinct difference there. And I certainly think culturally that difference isn't translated well, particularly in text form online. I've had plenty of discussions with players online from other parts of the world who will just, they'll call people, oh, win at all costs or whack players. And you go, no, no, no.
Did they cheat?
Are they cheating? No, they're not. They're just bringing these super hardcore lists and just beating everyone. I go, well, that's not win at all costs.
Yeah.
That's smashing face. That's going in there and just doing your absolute darndest to wipe people off the table as rapidly as possible. So they're kind of two different things for us. But the first part, no one ever has fun. First of all, if you find enjoyment by going and tabling your opponent in two turns, technically you are having fun.
Okay, but before we get to that, if you're spending this much money, time, energy, effort into, well, purchasing the models, practicing playing with the models and turning up to an event, if you're not having fun, why are you doing it?
Yeah.
So I think that's probably the first myth, is that it's not about having fun. It's not about having fun. Yeah, it should be. Like, I think surely the purpose of coming is to try and have fun. And I definitely see with the attendees at all of the events that I've been to, whether they've been ours or run by other clubs within Western Australia, I always see that the attendees are actually smiling, laughing, sharing a joke with their opponent.
Yeah, look, there are definitely some personality conflicts and the odd game which you might not find enjoyable.
But that's the difference, isn't it? It's a game that you might not find enjoyable as opposed to not having any fun at a full one-day event, or not having any fun at a two-day event or a three-day event.
Yeah. Yeah, tournaments ultimately should be fun. Competing has to be fun for you to want to go in the first place.
Yeah.
You have to be wanting to go for some reason. And anyone who goes to a tournament without competing in some capacity in mind and then coming away disappointed because they didn't have a fun time because they couldn't compete, well, you've set yourself up to fail to begin with there.
But you don't, like, competing doesn't necessarily have to be your goal.
No, but by its very nature, a competition, like a tournament, is a competition.
It is.
So, but what I'm saying is, if you go to that competition and then whinge after the fact that you didn't have any fun because you couldn't compete, okay, then that yeah. becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy at
well,
that point.
Well, I think you have to look at... I certainly don't hear the majority of players saying that they've left an event and haven't had any fun.
No.
And if they have, then you have to look at why they haven't had fun at that that event. And sometimes that's because, you know, there are obviously when you have a lot of people in the room, you have a lot of different personalities. And if you happen to get paired against six people that you don't get on well with, firstly, it might be time to have a little look in the mirror and work out if you're the common denominator. but no, if you do happen to get some really bad matchups, then that can affect your overall experience. But is it the exception rather than the rule?
Yeah.
And I think the rule should be that tournament players go to an event and have fun.
Yeah. Oh, look, there's certainly a percentage of players in the bigger events that leave after game one or game two because they can't win anymore. And I could argue that if they're leaving then they're probably not having fun either.
Have you experienced that in Western Australia?
No.
No.
We've had a couple of players try and leave at like the end of game four or five of a two-day event. Mm-hmm. And we've been able to talk them around or, you know, there's... it's one of those ones where sometimes they've just lost too many games and they're feeling a bit flat and they're tired. And it's very rare that we actually have them leave locally.
Hmm.
But again, that might be cultural. So...
But I think the second part of that is that tournament players are hardcore...
Well, all about smashing faces, the quote, and I don't think that's true.
No.
Because what you get out of a tournament comes back to your own goals and your own expectations and what you set yourself up for. And that's kind of what I was trying to get to with my first comment, was that smashing face doesn't have to be the reason you go.
No, and there will always be a percentage of people in the room that are going with the pure intent of winning.
Yeah.
But it is a minority that the of people in the room that the only reason that they are there is to win that event.
Yeah. I'd go so far as to say that the average punter doesn't even let that cross their mind.
No, they want... I mean, it'd
they would want
great
win,
to win.
But they don't go in expecting to win.
Mm.
So,
and not with their ability to have fun hinged on whether they win or not.
Yeah. So, I definitely think in general that's probably a myth.
Yeah, and I definitely think it's a myth because I wrote an entire blog post on that, which are you able to link in the comments for this?
Probably, if I can find the link.
It's open on my iPad because I read it as part of my prep for this episode.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So we'll move on to the next one then.
I think part of... Sorry, can we just keep going with that for a
sure.
moment? Because you did bring up win at all costs and that's on my little notes for today. I think that win at all costs is something that we certainly hear about tournament players, and it is something that we've covered before, that for us the definition of win at all costs is everything up into and including cheating.
The funny thing is I've said that to people before in other parts of the world and they go, oh, well, if I turn up to a game and pull a gun on you and tell you that I win, is that whack? I went,
yes.
Yeah, that qualifies.
But you don't have to do that in order to be considered whack. You know, like you don't have to get to that point.
No. But he said, oh, it's not cheating. The rules don't say I can't do that. And I just went, yeah, that's...
I think they do. I think part of the rules is you have to play the game in order to win. Like, the part of the rules isn't, oh, well, if you... Like, it doesn't say in the rules that you can pull a gun on someone in order to get them to concede.
Well, like I said to this particular person, rules are permissive. They tell you what you can do, not what you can't do, generally speaking. But...
I still think it's certainly implied that part of winning the game comes through playing the game.
Yeah. No, look, I think the terms, like they started with, Games Workshop started the terms cheesy and beardy way back in the 90s. And those two terms were referencing when people took armies that weren't set within the mythos of the stories of the game. Mm-hmm. So you were actively building armies that didn't fit the world.
Yeah.
And then somewhere over the years, those terms have been lost and dropped and we've moved into this... whack, win at all costs, being bandied around for anyone who wants to come along and actually compete at a tournament.
Yeah, and so one of the things that I talked about in the blog post that you're going to link is the difference between being a hardcore player and using a hard list. You know, having a strong tournament list doesn't necessarily make you a hardcore player.
No. I mean, again, in my mind, it keeps coming. I keep going back to sport because ultimately sport all started as games, and now you have competition level from, you know, high school level, you know, all the way through to international events for these various what are essentially games. Mm-hmm. And when you're going to a competition, like if you're going to, you know, the rally championships, you take a car that meets the criteria for the event.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't intentionally not put the right tyres on the car because you want to be fair with everyone because you've got more horsepower.
Yeah.
You don't detune your engine because you've got more horsepower.
And it's not cheating to tune your engine as best as you possibly can.
No, within the rules.
And, you know, make sure that you've put on the best possible tyres that are within the rules.
And make sure that you've got the fastest pit crew and make sure that you've got the best possible driver. And it's the same with... You can apply this literally to any sport. It'd be like, the World Cup. And
I have to use ears there, golly. Just to give the other team a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, any sort of competition when it comes to any sport is essentially a game. Mm. And you have a set of rules and there is nothing wrong with competing within the boundaries of those rules to the best of your abilities. You'll notice that when, like in cycling, when we've had very notable personalities who've been winning events and then get drug tested and then get pinged, that's win at all costs. Because now you are actively cheating to make sure that you can win. It'd be like turning up to a touring car event with a Formula One car.
Do you know what? I'm fairly sure you've made your point.
Okay,
I'm going to stop you because otherwise we're going to spend 20 minutes of you bringing up more analogies of the same thing.
Anyway, so that's where we get our win at all cost definition from.
Most definitely. And I just wanted to share that I do think that there's that there is a distinction between being hardcore, having a hardcore player and someone who brings a strong list. And another thing that I hear often about tournament players is that they're cutthroat. And I just don't see it.
I've played all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't think of a game. There's not been a single game. There's one game that I played internationally that I kind of walked away from going, I think you're being a little bit out of order there.
Mm.
It wasn't cheating, but it was, I don't know why, I can't put a finger on why I didn't enjoy that game, but I walked away from it with a sour taste in my mouth going, I didn't like the way you handled the game. Yeah. So even he doesn't fall into the win at all costs.
No, but I'm not necessarily talking about win at all costs now. I'm talking about that things are... How can I define what I mean by cutthroat? So, for example, Masters is our end event. So it is the biggest point list. It is the most competitive. It is, you know, but I still see people are friendly at the table.
Yeah.
And I still see people who are going, oh, hey, don't forget that with that, you get to do this movement before you do that. And you haven't done that yet. Now, I'm not, and there's a whole debate around whether or not players should allow take backs and things like that. And I don't want to go into that here. But what I'm saying is that I see in big tournaments that we run, I see take backs happening. I see the person who's on the other side of the table going, hey, buddy, do you know that you missed out this now? And then I see the opponent go, oh my God, I forgot. Oh, well, I've missed it. And I see the player going, don't worry about it. Just, you know, we're not playing for pink slips here. Roll the dice. So, and it may depend on which table you're on.
I was going to say, I definitely think that changes towards the end of the event, particularly at the pointy end.
Certainly. But what I'm saying is that not every tournament player is cutthroat.
No.
And when you are a brand new player who generally, if you're a new player or you're new to the tournament scene, you're probably not going to be playing for place one and two. Which means if you're playing lower down in the pecking order, you're going to have people who are much more relaxed and much more friendly who are going to be, you know, more amenable to creating a learning experience rather than I'm going to take advantage of the fact that you're new.
See, we certainly see that locally. The issues that I saw at the biggest events I've been to tend to actually be right at the bottom where you get two players who don't necessarily know, like you get two new players playing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get a conflict of people, but that becomes more about the...
But that's not cutthroat.
No. No, that's another type of conflict.
That's people who don't necessarily know the rules well enough to be able to interpret them and who require additional assistance to be able to work their way through those.
Yeah. Oh, look, when we played, which game was it, 4 or 5 at LVO, the guy I played was playing a really good list. Neither of us questioned what was going on. We both knew what we were dealing with. And at the end of the game, he went, oh, you know, look, I'm going to concede now. There's no point in playing it out. We know how this ends. Mm. And I said to him, okay, so you're going to give me a max win. He said, no, it's not a max win because you don't get max wins in ITC, so you're going to get this many points. And I went, well, no, we've still got time to play another round. If you're going to give me a max win, then we'll play another, then that's fine. Otherwise, I want my next turn because I've got time to table you.
So let me see if I can actually do it.
And he looked at me puzzled for a second there. I think he honestly thought I was just going to let it go. Mm. And I kind of, at the time, I kind of felt bad because at that point, you are playing punching bags where you're going, no, I want the points. So I could see how he could see that as cutthroat for my behavior. But, and it was literally, in that format at that time, it was 1 point. But that was in round five on day 2. Mm. And that 1 point actually could make a difference.
Sure.
And it's the same.
I think it's the way that you do it as well.
Well, it's the same when I played round 6 against Lawrence from Tabletop Tactics.
Yeah.
And at the end of the first turn, he went, do you want to call it here, dude? Because you and I both know how this plays out. And he wasn't doing it to be a jerk.
Yeah.
He was doing it because he knew that I knew what was coming.
Yeah.
And I said to him, no.
I'm going to make you work for every single point. Because
I want to see how many points you get, and I want to make you work for those points. And he still ended up getting a max win, but I scored points as well instead of giving up and getting nothing. But that wasn't the point. The point was to play the game.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think there are definitely players out there who like to be cutthroat and, push the boundaries of what's socially acceptable. But I think that also comes down to the social contract.
That's it. But there is always going to be the outlier. What I'm saying is that I don't see that as the norm for events. And Matt Antonello was saying for his myth that tournaments are full of mythical whack players. And I just don't think...
No.
We don't...
By our definition, certainly not.
No. But even by other people's definition, I don't think they're full of mythical... full of whack players.
I definitely think that there's always players who will be considered jerks.
I now just have a mental picture of somebody with a unicorn horn and wings as,
mythical whack.
Yeah.
Might have to see if I can Photoshop something up for the image for this episode.
We're not going to have time for that.
But he, that reference is all these, obnoxious, jerky players. Yeah, the bigger the event, the more likely you are to get one.
Yeah.
Or 2 or 5 or whatever, depending, again, on demographic and location and all the rest of it. But by and large, I've met all sorts of walks of life of players, and even when we've disagreed across the table and win or lose, it's always been resolved at the end of it. We both walk away going, there's very few people I would count that I would ever not want to play again. Very few.
Hmm. Okay, so I think we've probably got time for one more.
Yeah, we'll look at Dan's one next. Fluffiness.
You've missed one, but that's okay. We'll come back to that one.
Fluffy lists never win, and you have to take the best from your book. There are only a few top tier lists, and if you're not running that, then you have no chance at a tournament. All opponents are scary, and you will try and pull a fast one on you if they get at the chance. And if you don't know the other person's list, kill the best painted thing, as it's probably the best thing in their army. continues to paint his scouts to the best of his ability for this weekend's event.
Okay, so there's a couple of things there. So all opponents are scary and will try and pull a fast one over you any chance they get. I think that's kind of my definition of that cutthroat thing, is being that, trying to pull the fast one and trying to...
Yeah, look, we've seen people, some notable ones on streams in recent years where people have knowingly pulled a fast one, like literally pulled a gotcha moment.
Yeah.
Often involving the opponent helping themselves to achieve that.
Yeah.
But I think the average player won't try and pull a fast one on their opponent because I think the average player wants to win honestly. They might not realize that they're pulling a fast one in a lot of cases where they do something and their opponent goes, oh my God, I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah, but that's not pulling a fast one. That's playing the game, and that's very different to encouraging your opponent to skip over things, to move really quickly and you know, and helping them do it. It's, I think there's a difference between not pointing out that your opponent is making a mistake and helping them to make a mistake. But I don't see, I certainly don't see that happening.
No, I mean, the psychology across the table is a whole other topic we can cover another day, because if you can understand where your opponent's at and how they enjoy playing the game and how they, you know, you don't want to emotionally blackmail people and you don't want to do all that sort of horrible stuff, but the psychology of gaming is a whole other topic where you can read people and understand their motivations, and you can often use that as helping you make better choices for yourself. But that doesn't even come into this.
No, not at all. So I'm not sure why you brought that up.
Thanks.
No problem. Yes, I think we've covered the all opponents are scary and we'll try and pull a fast one. So what about, because this is an easy part, if you don't know the other person's army, kill the best painted things. It's probably the, as it's probably the most, it's
best thing, in their army. Yeah. Look, that could work for, you know, fresh armies where you look at it and go, oh, cool, there's a Death Guard army here. Mortarians beautifully painted and everything else looks like a hodgepodge.
But I think that's, it is probably true, isn't it?
I don't know.
I reckon it would be.
Again, I think it'll come down to the player.
It comes down to the player, and it comes down, you know, we've got some people who are really methodical with their painting and everything on the table is at the same standard.
I think if the army's not at the same standard, the level of consistency is not there, then yeah, you're probably right. Because if they've spent all this time painting one particular unit or model and got it finished.
Yeah, then chances are they've done that for a reason.
That was important for them. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you're more likely to pick out and make the centerpiece the model that is the hero of your army than you are to pick out, you know, the equivalent of a pawn on a chess table.
Yeah. Well, they're always the most detailed models and they're always take the most time to do. And so you naturally spend more time on them and you want them to perform on the table.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I think if you've got consistently poor painting or consistently beautiful painting, it's probably not going to help you.
No, probably not.
Fluffy lists never win.
And you have to take the best of your book. I don't think that's true necessarily. First of all, it depends on the event you're going to.
I think it just depends. I mean, I don't think that it's true. There we go.
I think it's true for some events, because ultimately, when you elect to take units that aren't optimal, you are naturally hamstringing yourself.
While I don't disagree with you, I think it comes down to your skill and proficiency with using that army.
The key word for me is why this is a myth is the word never. Fluffy lists never win, and you have to take the best from your book. No, that's not true.
It also depends on what your goals are as well. And I know this is talking about winning, but it doesn't mean that you can't take fluffy lists and still do well with them. Mm. And again, for me, it comes back to your, you know, how you've practiced with that and how proficient you are using it. And
well, Dan, in this particular case, actually played my all fluffy, all stealth Tau army at an event in round two it was that he and I played. And three units of stealth suits, three ghost keels, and Shadow Sun. It was an all stealth army. It's an army I've always wanted to do. Anyone who plays Tau will tell you that that's not the best way to play a Tau army. Mm-hmm. I politely disagreed in most cases. Sometimes I just disagreed loudly.
Mm, I like you.
But I won my first game and I beat Dan in the second round.
Oh, see, I was about to ask, did you submarine?
No.
But no, if you won the first game, then...
No. Yeah. my fluffy stealth list that matches all the stories about these lone wolves that hunt out in front of the enemy lines and all the rest of it worked. I didn't win the event with it, but no. I won games with it.
But I think that if you look at the flip side of it, you have to take the best from your book, and there's only a few top tier lists.
I'm taking that second sentence as a second.
Yes, so am I. That's fine. You can take the best of your book, and you can create a hard army that, according to the internet, should do exceptionally well. But if you don't know how to play that army, and you don't know how to maximize its abilities and maximize its advantages on the table, then you're not going to win.
No, we see it every year with LVO.
That's
right. Without fail, every year.
But if you take an unusual army that you know inside out and you know how to maximize and you know how to, you know, and this is where you're going to achieve those things that people may feel are gotcha moments because they don't, they weren't expecting that. They weren't expecting for what they perceive as a fluffy list to be able to inflict this amount of damage and cause this amount of chaos.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's why I think that this is a myth, because I think once, if you play and practice against multiple different armies and against multiple different opponents and you learn how to use that, then you can do amazing things with it.
Yep.
But you can take the hardest list possible and not know how to play it and you can come last.
Oh, look, yeah. Anyone who chases the meta by running the tournament list that won LVO to the following year's LVO in the same game system, event format and all the rest of it, you're a year behind the you know, where you need to be.
Yeah, I'm not even talking about meta, really. And part of it's because I know that it's one of your soapbox words, so I really do try and avoid it. But just really, I think it's about knowing your army.
Yeah. So, which kind of goes into his next point, which was there are only a few top tier lists, and if you're not running that, then you have no chance. Again, I don't think that's necessarily true, because the guys who are winning events are innovating and taking new things.
That's it. And we've certainly talked about that on previous podcasts, yeah, haven't we? Where we talk about leading the meta rather than following the meta.
Yeah. And I think that it's possible for you to take a list that wins a big event and then go to another little event the following week and lose, like you've just said. It's also possible, though, to take it to a little event the following week and win with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think the top tier lists are any guarantee of victory.
No.
So, you know, I was actually talking to one of our listeners today, and I said to him, in my mind, you've got a few different factors for how you win a game. Part of it's at the list creation, so you understand how you built your army, what it does and how it all interacts.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it's at the actual table, understanding how your opponent's army moves and behaves and its, you know, moving parts.
And the strategies that go into the deployment.
Your deployment and movement phases.
And,
as soon as you get past the movement phase in any game, as soon as you pick up a dice...
That's it. It's all about luck,
that last
baby.
20% is all on the hands of whatever fate or karma or luck or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
You can prepare up until the point you have to pick up a dice.
Yeah. And I do, in a loving kind of way, make fun of you and say that when you win, it's all about skill, and when you lose, it's bad luck. But... You know, there is that element of luck that is in any game.
I played a game at one of the clubs recently with a very fluffy army, which at the moment isn't going to win me many games. But in retrospect, I was thinking about it afterwards because I lost the game quite badly. I rolled absolutely appallingly throughout the game. Like the when you start working out the probabilities and statistics, it was well below the curve in terms of what it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
But I walked away from that going, oh, you know, that's a bit disappointing. I haven't even finished building the damn army and it's losing games. And then I sort of in the car on the way home thought about it more and went, hang on a minute. I killed all the infantry. One knight was almost dead. One was half dead and the other two were a third dead. And I was rolling so far below the curve that I achieved that in four turns. Mm. If I'd actually rolled average...
Yeah. How
we might have actually had a game.
Yeah.
And if I'd rolled above average, then we could have seen a reverse result.
Yeah.
So, I don't think you necessarily, like, yeah, there are definitely top lists that utilize and maximize the current game system and work towards minimizing the damage that dice can do.
Yeah. And at the risk of repeating myself, because I know that I have said this before, and I know that when I was proofreading and editing the tournament prep guide, that this certainly came up when we were discussing it, but... What we talked about was not changing your list based on the result of one game.
Yeah.
So, you know, for you to go, oh, look, I haven't even finished building it. It would have been easy to go, what's the point? I'm ripping that out. I'm putting something stronger in. But really, you haven't
no,
learned
I've got no
how
data.
It works. That's it. You've got nothing to base that on other than one event, which is why I laughed at you at the beginning of this by saying that based on one game where your brand new model was the first one to die... You can't say that a myth is accurate, you know?
Yeah.
And I know that you were messing around, but I don't think that based on one game, you can say this is a fluffy list or this list isn't strong or this list is awesome. Oh my God, I tabled my opponent. This is the strongest list going.
Yeah.
You really need practice against different armies and you need to learn how you can increase your ability to get a better outcome.
Yeah. which ultimately is everything other than rolling a dice or minimizing the way dice affect what's going on. Or cards if you're playing Malifaux.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think that wraps up what... Does that wrap up all of what Dan...
Yes, that covers everything from Dan, from our listener. That being said, we're now 40-something minutes into the topic, so this is going to be a two-part episode.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to catch the second half of this conversation in 2 weeks' time, or it'll be episode 30 if you're listening to this in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll wrap up episode 29's topic and be back in a second to wrap up this episode. Okay, so that was part one of today's podcast or topic.
That was part one of the topic, and part two will be in a fortnight.
Yeah. Episode 30 will see us cover more of the myths in tournament gaming.
Mm-hmm. And as we're recording this, more myths are coming through, so we could end up with part three, part four, and part five.
I don't know about that.
No, we'll see. We get covered next week.
Yeah.
Next episode.
By the time you're hearing this, we'll be venturing around in the UK somewhere or else, or other. Where will we? Will we actually be?
We'll be in London.
We'll be in London.
Yes.
So, I've managed to find a London Gaming Guild as well. If I get a free night to go and wandering.
Oh, brilliant!
Find some more like-minded individuals.
I was just thinking how. You know, I was really upset that you know, I'd have 3 weeks with no gaming as part of my life. So,
I said I would go. I didn't say you had to come.
Anyway.
Also, at the time of recording, I've gotten the series.
I think you can probably stop saying at the time of recording.
Okay.
Because you're not going to get it in the future.
No, that's true. I've just picked up the Series 2 of the Japanese Space Marines, and I've literally just opened them. I'm going to do an unboxing video live tonight.
Have you already unboxed them?
Yeah, but I've got them all here.
That's cheating.
I've got them on the sprues.
No, you're supposed to unbox.
No, but the beauty of this is...
If you're doing a live unboxing, you can't do it 4 hours later because you couldn't wait.
But they're blind boxes, so I needed to make sure I actually had all six because I didn't know what was in the blind boxes. And because
you have no ability to be patient.
But also because this isn't going out for like 2 weeks' time. It'll be live tonight and then people can listen to this and realise that I'd already opened them. That's cunning.
It's not. It's not cunning.
The Blood Angel Terminator Captain is really cool. I've only seen a silhouette and there's no good high-resolution pictures anywhere online. So I had to make sure I had him in the set.
Right.
So I'm very
happy. Do you have to make sure we have a high-resolution picture as well?
Yeah, he'll go in the show notes.
Right, will he?
Yeah.
Who's taking that high-resolution
picture? Me on my iPhone.
Right, so not a high-resolution.
It's a 6-megapixel. It'll be fine. on that note, we're going to end episode 29. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you in episode 30.
Mm-hmm.
But before then, you can also catch us live on Facebook every other week, alternating with the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And you can follow
us. Our next Facebook Live will probably... Oh, no, we covered that, didn't we? Happen on the 29th of November.
Yes, which will be live from Warhammer World with a bit of luck.
Mm-hmm.
But you can go and check that out if you're in the future. You can check that on the Facebook page. Under the video section, you can watch that video. This is weird. I'm sure we have to stop doing it this far ahead. Like, the recordings are just weird for me.
Mm.
Anyway.
Well, you could try being organized, but that's okay.
Yeah. We will catch you on the next episode, guys. Until then.
Happy gaming, everyone.
You've been listening to the Objective Secured podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can visit our website, objectivesecured.com.au. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/objectivesecured, or you can email us, obsec@optusnet.com.au. Thanks for listening.